You are listening to the Essence of Change podcast, a conversation where transformation happens, with your co-hosts Omar Ben Musa and Dr. Keith Blevins. Here is the 14th episode.
Hello and welcome everyone to a new episode of the Essence of Change podcast with my co-host, Dr. Keith Blevins. It's been a while that we haven't recorded a podcast, and we are really glad to be back and do this again because myself and Keith really enjoyed, just pressing the record button and record something that we hope that will be of, you know, value and help to, our listeners. And so we're glad to be back. And today we actually want to share and explore the topic of a living principle. That's what we titled this episode. And I'm looking forward for this conversation. So just before pressing the recording button, Keith was, you know, sharing with me something so valuable about the principles that they are a living principle that are, always in the movement. That means that they are not really dead. That's they are beyond time, space, and matter, and from another dimension. And so I was really intrigued when Keith said that there are principles of movement, and I had to ask him, what do you mean by that? And he went on and said that, well, they are not dead, you know. and they are living in everything, really, and the source of everything. And that was just beautiful to, you know, to hear. And I'm sure that this is something that we'll ponder on and hopefully get cleared on after this conversation.
Yeah.
So, good to be back, Keith.
Thank you, Omar. It's a pleasure, absolute pleasure to be here and reflect on these principles, because they are from another dimension, and if you can get facile or knowledgeable of or have insights about that distinction and difference between so when one realizes the principles, or there's a dimension that opens up, and it's not in the past, it's not in the future, it's now, and the now is always a living, a breathing existence, isn't it? Like it's eternal. And to talk about that is a magical thing, because it's not in your concepts and your beliefs and your dogma or your thinking system. It's not in there. It's not in your conditioning. And that's wonderful to have another dimension, because we do have another dimension, and that other dimension is the principles, and it's within everything, as you said. It's within. So something that's within everything is, it's formless. But one of the things that Sid wrote that I remember in my book, he said about I asked him a question about about Einstein, And he said, well, Dr. Einstein was talking about the already formed energy of this world. And what I'm talking about is before creation, before the form, or beyond the form. And Dr. Einstein was talking about after the form. And I thought, oh, well, that's simple. But it points to another dimension of, and he said, and I now understand that this is something that everybody within themselves must already be aware of. It's not something that you're not aware of. You just don't believe it yet. You're not familiar with it. You're not cognizant of it. You're not flat-footed with it. When you're and you and I were laughing about, because I love talking to Omar, because he said, what, you know, he says in his own accent, what's this flat-footed thing? You know, I said, well, it's like a soccer player. You know, if you're flat-footed, the ball comes at you, kind of dinks you in the head. You know, you're not really, you didn't see that one coming. You know, you're kind of like off balance, you're thrown off balance by the ball dinging you in the head. But if you're on your toes and you're in the present, you're responsive, and you see you're not flat-footed. You do a header, or you respond to the ball. You're in the game. You're not there's not a you know, not that awkwardness, and that's our term.
Yeah.
At least in the States, for flat-footed. You know what I mean. You've been flat-footed on the field, and I've been flat-footed. We've all been flat-footed sometimes. Like I was relating a story to Omar about working with Brett Chitty, and he turned to me in a program and said, any comments, Keith, or whatever? And I thought, what? Oh, he's asking me something. And I gave a kind of like a, what I considered later was kind of a lame response. And I said, hey, Brett, you know, you caught me flat-footed there. And because I had so much more to say, but it didn't occur to me to say it in the moment because I was flat-footed.
Yeah. It reminds me of, you know, this idea of, I read a quote once that you cannot read about push-ups. You gotta do them, you know, and it's the same about, you know, when we have an idea in our minds and we don't act upon that idea, or about that whisper from, you know, this space, you know, then now, really, we're really flat-footed, as you said, you know, like, you know, so sometimes I do have, you know, something that occurs to me, and then I don't really write it down or anything, and then the next morning is like it's gone, like I don't remember what yeah. came to mind.
Yeah.
You know, really, being in that state of flow, you know, you were talking about soccer, and you know, what came to mind is that a good soccer player, like you know, Cristiano Ronaldo or Messi. I remember hearing or listening to an interview of Cristiano, and they ask him, like, what do you think about when you score these amazing goals and this And it was like, well, I don't know. I don't think about anything, you know, like it made sense to me. Like he is in a state of flow, because if he's really thinking about, you know, the ball and how he's going to score it and, you know, make it a matter of intellect, then we are not really in the state of flow. We are not really present in the game, you know. If I'm thinking about my relationship and I have a big game ahead of me, like I'm flat footed. I'll be flat footed in that situation.
Yeah.
And so there is a beauty about you know, you mentioned earlier about Sydney Banks talking about Einstein, like he's talking about the form, and Sydney Banks is talking about something beyond the form, the formless. And that to me is really coming back to the source of everything, you know. But when I really pay attention to the form only, I'm really missing the point. And this is where actually I begin suffering. This is where we really suffer. Suffer needlessly, you know, whatever that is, because there is really no answer in the world of form if we take the formless out of the equation. It's like when Sydney Banks, you know, says, turn around and look, you know, inside, deep inside. That to me, you know, he's pointing at the formless. But, you know, like sometimes you don't really hear that and you try to understand it with our intellect. So like, what do you mean inside? Like inside my heart, you know, my liver or my stomach?
My gut. Yeah.
My gut.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, but that's not really it. That, you know, it's deeper than that. It's not the form, you know, the inside, what you're saying, the heart or the liver or stomach, it's the form. But this is form. This is what really created your stomach, your heart, you know, you know, everything.
Well, yeah, and when people say that, when you say something, like you say liver or stomach or gut or heart, you're it's in the body. You're looking in the body, and the term within doesn't pertain to the body. It's not in your body. You don't look within your body. It's nothing to do with the physical. Nothing. It's beyond the physical, beyond time, space, and matter. So it's not really a physical. There's no physicality. There's no intellectuality there. That's not really. It's within everything. And something that's within everything is nothing. It's nothing in terms of concepts or beliefs or intellectualization. It's because it's not, it's in a different dimension. It's in a different realm, if you will. It's just, you know, all you can do is to kind of point to it, but you can't really intellectually nail it down, you know, because it's not of that type. It has another typology, you could say. So endless, and it's endlessly It's endless and immortal. It's not a mortal knowledge. And when you realize, when one realizes that, you could call it a self, you could call it the gates of heaven, you could call it you could call it whatever you want to call it. The label doesn't do it justice, does it? You know, like it's just a means of trying to allude to something or imply something or communicate something. And it's that something that's incommunicatable. Well, it is communicatable, but by some spiritual means. It's not a means of words. And so that's why there's all these languages and all these cultures and all these wise people, sages, and people through the ages have all spoken to or spoken toward, but they can't speak that.
It's absolutely fascinating, you know, listening to that, Keith. And what I was reminded is a quote by, you know, I love Rumi, and you know, his sharings of his poets, and he once said that silence is the language of God. All else is poor translation. You know, so don't mind our poor translation, people. But
like I remember Sid saying once, I'm trying to say it, but I'm not saying it. You know, and you think, well, but you wanted to hear what was he going to say next? Like it was like, yeah, I hear you, but I can't grab it, you know, in my intellect, my intellectual capabilities are in my conditioning. And in my conditioning, there are no words for God or for the principles. But they exist. They do exist. God does exist. But not in the words.
Absolutely not. You know, something that occurred to me about that is that this knowledge is really something that we cannot own. You know, we cannot take credit. And what I've noticed is that when we try to understand, you know, this with our intellect, we are trying to take credit for something that cannot be taken or, you know, granted or take credit for.
Yeah, how could you take credit for that?
And this is where, you know, I recently shared on Tawhid and the Spirituality of the Three Principles about surrendering to what is. This is where, you know, what surrendering is all about. It's really not trying to take credit or ownership for that. Because when we do, we really miss the point.
Oh, totally. Because you've concretized it. You know, you've made it mine. And it's not ours. It's not everybody's. Or it belongs to my sect, SECT, or my religion. And presumptively, in there, it doesn't belong to your religion. I know, you know, I have the truth, and you don't. You know, so there's another that's been created therein that that is artificial. It's not really what the sage or the or anyone is trying to, or anyone, you know, who's being accurate and conscientious is trying to posit. You know, the, you know, it's not a, it's not limited to that means. And so there's a limitation that comes in, and that limitation is not the essence of the truth. It can't be. It's not possible to be so limited. And that is the gates of heaven, or the eternal now, or the truth, whatever, however you might want to try to depict it, is not it. It's just a way. It's just a depiction and an illustration, a way of trade of that. And these wise people knew that, and they traded words, or they traded spaces, or they traded experiences. But they knew full well. They knew, and what we're saying in this program is that we know what we can't say it.
Yeah.
But we know we can't say it. There's something to the something incredibly important to the knowledge that you can't say it. I mean, that's just remarkably helpful, because what has happened to psychology and the world too is they get locked in. We can get locked into a judgmentalism and a way of alienation, and it's out of that illusion of alienation that people feel, you know, and then there's the other, and they get polarized, and they get from others, and they feel righteous about what they know and you don't. So it creates a two, and you quit seeing yourself in others. When you don't see yourself in others, truly, everybody, you know, then you missed it, because you've and you feel that divorce. You have, so everybody knows within themselves, if they could just stop and realize that the feeling they're in, you could call it fear or negativity. You could call it it's negativity. And when you feel negativity, you're in your conditioning. You're in the illusion. You're in the and that's the fragmentation that has plagued psychology. The psychology of the world has been fragmented because it's had no principles. And William James, by the way, who was the father of American psychology, the first book he published was titled The Principles of Psychology. And then someone said, well, wait a minute, Dr. James, I read your book and I read it thoroughly and I found no principles in it. And William James wrote at the end of his second book, which was a kind of, they called it the Jimmy because it wasn't as full as the first book. But he wrote at the end of the Jimmy, he wrote that psychology has yet to find her principles. And he said, I don't know what the principles are. I titled my first book because I hoped that it might lead to the principles, but it has not, and I don't know what they are. But when the principles are found, as come they someday surely will, that's his quote, which is what happened to Sidney Banks. Somehow Sidney Banks found those three principles. And there's not four, there's three: my divine mind, divine consciousness, and divine thought. And he found them. And then he thought, I've got to tell a psychologist about it. This is a big deal. This is a good thing, you know. And then he would say over and over again that it's been really hard because it's not a concept. These principles are not concepts. They're not beliefs. They're in another realm, another dimension. And people would argue with him. People that were listening from the dimension of intellectualization, and he would say again and again and again and again and again for the many years that he spoke after his enlightenment, he would say, don't pay attention to my words. Just listen, please. Just please. And he was very polite and very relaxed, incredibly relaxed and humble. Because he knew what he found, you know, mm-hmm. and he embodied that finding. He couldn't help but embody it when he was touching that state or in that state, because one of my favorite phrases, as you know, Omar, my wife, Valda Monroe, said, these principles make me behave. And it just tickles me to hear her say that, because it made Sid Banks behave, you know, and he was a conduit, but not an owner. As you said a few minutes ago, these weren't his principles. They're our principles. They're psychology's principles.
They're living principles, as you mentioned, Keith.
Yes.
I just loved what, you know, listening to you and just, you know, You went on and on and on, and I didn't want to you know,
Yes.
To share anything, because I was just really coming back to that while you were talking. So thank you, Keith. That was beautiful. And my hope that this will be also valuable and not touching, but to me, this is transformational knowledge, Keith. So I hope that this does to anyone who listens to this. And as you mentioned, you know, it's really funny you were saying that we cannot put it into words, we cannot word it, we cannot talk about it. But we are doing a podcast, you know, we are trying our best, you know. That's kind of, you know, it's funny.
It's incongruous, isn't it? It's like, but what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
This is the best we can do, but it's good enough.
Great. Well, thank you, Keith. I've, you know, really enjoyed this myself, and I hope that our listeners will do too. And so, yeah, thank you for, you know, listening. And I think now we reached almost 40 countries. So thank to our listeners
Did you say 40?
Yeah,
you said countries. 40 countries. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fascinating, Keith.
I thought you said centuries, and I thought, how do you reach 40 centuries with a podcast, you know? But no, 40 countries, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
You're thinking I'm flat-footed or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Thank you. And yeah, see you in another episode.
Yes.